We'll call the meeting of the House Special Committee on Arctic Policy, Economic Development, and Tourism to order. Let the record reflect, it is 11:31 a.m., Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018. Members present are Representative Edgman, Tuck, Josephson, Newman, Knopp, and myself, Representative Lincoln. We also have Representative Gren with us in the room. We have a quorum to conduct business, and I'd ask everyone to please silence your cell phones. And I'd also like to thank Committee Secretary Susie Edwards and Leah Kraft from the Juno LIO for being with us today to transcribe and record. And present with us also is Raven Nostein to help with any committee needs. Today, intend to continue our discussion on House Bill 383, an act establishing the Travel Alaska Board relating to tourism marketing assessment and establishing a tourism marketing fund. I would also like to bring the bill sponsor forward along with his staff, Ms. Brooke Ivey, to address questions. And we will have we'll briefly reopen public testimony for input on the new CS. Representative Gren and Ms. Ivey, would you please put yourself on the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Gren, District 22 in Anchorage, Alaska.
Brooke Ivey, staff to Representative Jason Gren.
And continuing the discussion from our last meeting, are there any questions or comments from the committee at this time, or should we go into public testimony? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 10, under weighted votes, looking at lines 18 through 21, we have votes shall be weighted in proportion to the assessment that each voting tourism business is estimated to pay for the calendar year immediately following the election as determined. And then we have B down below there. So I'm just trying to figure out, it looks like to me that there's going to be some conditions to where, instead to determine the weighted vote, they're going to be looking forward on what somebody would be making. And then there's other circumstances where we'll be looking backwards at somebody and what they're making. And when do we use one versus the other? If you look at lines 25 to 28, it looks like the department would determine that. That's also immediately follow going ahead. So the department's going to have to determine how to do that looking forward. But in lines – I guess it's all looking forward. Is that correct? I'm not sure. I'm just confused with this whole weighted vote section. If you don't mind explaining how that would work.
Representative Tuck, through the chair, the votes would be weighted based on the estimation of what they would pay in the calendar year immediately following the initial election, or if, for example, they are being newly involved in the weighted vote process and don't have a history of a payment to base the weighted vote on. In future years, so after the first year, you know, if there was an amendment vote or something along those lines where they would need to make sure the votes are weighted properly, they could look back to previously assessed assessment revenues and assessment payments to weight that vote accordingly. So subsection B under 4425275 on page 10 references any time the department, and this is at the request of the Department of Revenue, that they be offered some authority that any time they don't have sufficient information to weight that vote for a business that hasn't yet paid into an assessment, they would have the opportunity to determine a method for how to weight that vote without the information to ensure that that business still gets to participate.
Okay. So there's two circumstances where we have to look forward through the chair. And the first one is initially, and the second time is any time a new business comes into the market. Okay, that makes sense to me. That's great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and please let the record reflect that Rep. Talrico joined us at 11:34. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grant, in the last meeting, I asked you to, I think what this bill does is creates different tax structures or different tax levels against different tourism marketing industries, and if you had any thoughts on what those taxes would be or if they're different, if, how the structure would be, if you've given that any further thought.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, different segments would have different taxes and different tax levels, different assessment levels that they vote on. I think that's appropriate.
Follow-up?
Just to follow up, Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to figure out how where we're going with this bill. You know, Representative Grant, have you had discussions recently with the department or anybody within the industry on what those tax rates would be? Is it 1%, 2%, 10%? Is it off their gross or net? I guess this is against the credits against the vehicle rental tax. What if they don't rent vehicles? You know, I have no idea what the structure of what these tax rates are and who they are, and I'm just wondering if the representative had discussions with the department or any of these individuals from the industry since the last meeting.
Representative through the chair, Representative Newman, I think on some of the information you're looking for is on page 6 of the bill regarding the different levels of the percent of the gross revenue related to the assessed segment, on and then how those would be the different percentages that they could vote on.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rep. Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Grant, my understanding in relative to Representative Newman's question is simply that you're not changing anything relative. Whoever's paying the vehicle rental tax now would continue to pay the vehicle rental tax. You're not changing the formula for that. You're simply offering them a credit if they wish to forward their revenue to the new tourism marketing board with essentially interfacing with the Department of Revenue and the approval of the legislature, because it says the legislature may appropriate those funds. It's believed that the legislature would do that because the intent of this is written all over every document. But you're not changing that part of the vehicle rental tax, am I right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that's correct. And the first page of the bill, Section 1, does give some more information regarding the unused credits under the section for a tax year are not sold, traded, transferred, or applied in a subsequent tax year. So the information that you're referencing remains the same.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the committee before we ask for public testimony? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Grant, basically what we're doing is we have the vehicle rental tax now that already goes in. The legislature uses that against needs within the administration. They use that because particularly this year, funds generated, there's been a determination, quite a few different budgets, that if the monies were generated within that particular department, that they go back as designated funds within that department. So now we're taking what would be designated funds for this tourism credit tax or the travel, you know, and we're moving them, but we're basically, that's still going to have to be supplemented or replaced with general fund dollars for where these are already there. Why wouldn't you just give the Tourism Marketing Board general fund dollars instead of replacing it from general fund dollars that are already there? That's my question.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, obviously you're well aware of the intent language a few years ago in finance that asked for us to move away, asked the tourism industry to move away from using GF specifically towards marketing efforts. And this really ends up being a policy call. If we believe that the vehicle rental tax should do what the intent is to go towards tourism fund and those efforts, there could be a loss of GF, vehicle rental tax. They're going to those departments, the Department of Natural Resources, Department of Transportation. There could be a potential loss to their UGF. We realize that. What we're proposing is to do the intent, to fulfill the intent of the language of what the VRT should be used for, which we believe is tourism marketing efforts, which have a We've talked about the ROI that it has to the state economy, to the local economies, and as we've told the industry that they should stop relying on general funds, how do we show to be good partners to maximize dollars that are generated through tourists and continue to increase our economy? So we realize that your question is legitimate, and there's a concern on that side. For us, we believe that the intent we can use those funds in a more aligned focus of what the intent language is regarding the VRT.
Just an observation, I guess, Mr. Chair. You know what we did is we the prior version of this was going to take another tax on vehicle rentals that goes back into the departments to cover the cost of running our parks and ferries because of the expansion, you know. And I think it's been determined that that was probably not a good idea because you just have to replace them with general fund dollars anyhow. And what we have is a plan that just uses a different tax and does the same thing. So I'm not quite sure what we gained or what are we doing here, but an observation is we still have to replace this with general fund dollars, and why wouldn't you just give them the money instead of a whole bunch of other regulations and stipulations if that's what you have to do anyhow. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Representative Tuck has a comment or question, and after that we will enter open public testimony. Tuck.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 4 of the bill, line 23, the powers of the board, number 5, acquire, hold, lease, sell, or otherwise dispose of property, but the property is limited to which is necessary to the administrative functioning of the board. And then going on over to page, bottom of page 5, expenditures, and then going on to page 6, expenditures shall be limited, must be consistent with the marketing plan prepared, and then 2, there's a limitation on expenditures may not be spent on capital or infrastructure improvement projects. For purpose of this paragraph, capital or infrastructure improvement projects do not include information technology, website development, or office equipment. So does that mean that any improvements that you need on a property that you may have is going to come out of the just the regular membership fees that the board would get? I'm just wondering if you end up purchasing land or building to do your administrative functions.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Tuck. I mean, but the intent of this, marketing fund is to narrow the efforts of what we all believe to be, marketing, advertising, promotion, and limiting that to, no capital projects, I think, is appropriate, but I'll also defer to my staff to answer some of the details if she has anything.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I just wanted to speak to your question about on page 4, lines 23 through 25. That language was taken directly from the ASME statute, just so you're aware of that. And then we actually did discuss that with legislative legal. And there was no concern with that language. As for on pages 5 through 6, section 442520 expenditures, the subsection 2 clarifying that the funds may not be spent on capital or infrastructure improvement projects was, as Representative Gren referred to, intended to ensure that the funds were being used strictly for tourism improvement and marketing. So just as you've seen with the vehicle rental tax revenues, they've been used in a different manner. This was to narrow the manner in which those funds are utilized and not broaden that scope to, say, dock improvements or something along those lines. But I will say that Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal, our drafter, I believe, is online as well, if you would like get more detail on that.
Okay.
You have a follow-up?
I read it as it would actually come out of the membership fees that people would do membership, because it looks like you guys limited yourself pretty tightly on what you can or can't do with the assessment fees. So I think the question's answered from what I hear. I just heard.
Okay. If it's okay with the rest of the committee, I'd like to get into public testimony, then we'll have time, hopefully at the end, for more discussion. So at this time, we'll open public testimony on House Bill 383. We've got a handful of callers on the line. When providing your testimony, please state your name and any affiliation for the record. And we're asking that testimony be limited to two minutes per person. And our first testifier will be Judith White, calling in from Anchorage. Are you there, Ms. White?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and any affiliation and begin your testimony.
My name is Judith White. I plan on some tourism businesses, but I'm representing myself today. I used to work for the state of Alaska for almost 20 years. I was the chief of a section for the Public Utilities Commission. And I'd like to speak about the effect of this really extremely convoluted, complex bill and what it is going to create in terms of a bureaucracy. Think about, first, the division of elections. Every time the board decides to change or institute a rate, the director of the elections has a new job. He has to approve the notice, make sure the ballot that's used is right, and then that the registration and voting procedures are correct, and then he has to certify the results, but that's only after he's counted the votes. And those votes are not simple, because each vote has to be weighted according to the entity's gross revenue. So it's not one vote equals one vote. It's one vote might equal one vote, and another vote might equal 10 votes, and another vote might equal 62.5 votes. And it goes on and on. So in other words, we're setting up an entirely new set of elections for the division of elections to run, more complex probably than any that it's ever had. There is a cost to this. There will be new employees that will be required, and I don't know that there's been any estimate of the cost to the division of elections. But that pales in comparison to what's going to happen with the Department of Revenue, because all of these quarterly reports that are going to have to be filed, there will be thousands and thousands of them. Think about the staffing that's already required for the ESC, you know, the unemployment division in the Department of Commerce. People already have to file these quarterly reports, and they have large staffing.
Ms. White, can you hear me? That's 2 minutes. If you don't mind wrapping up your comments, please.
Just that you are creating a huge bureaucracy within the Department of Revenue, and you need to think about whether we ought to be trying to hire a lot more state workers at this time.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from the committee for Ms. White?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. Ms. White, Alaska is in a fiscal crisis, and we used to give this industry a grant of $16 million or maybe even a little more. Last year, I think the industry received $1.5 million. And so our investment in your industry is, I think, among the smallest in the nation. It may be that Delaware gives slightly less. I'd have to look at that again. But given that the bill allows you to transfer and pass any assessment onto your bike renters, I suppose they might object if they sort of knew what was going on, but how do you view this as harming you directly? Your comments have been about the department's burden, but what about you?
Well, first of all, I'm a member of the state of Alaska. I care about what's happening to having a bloated state government. And I care about the fact that, of course, it's unconstitutional because it creates a dedicated fund. So I have a lot of good government issues. But as to the effect on us, I would just point out that people, most of the people who come up to Alaska are not filthy rich. Now, there are some people who come who are filthy rich. But for many people, they have saved and scrimped. And for them, this is the trip of a lifetime. And every penny that they spend on this tax is a penny that they are not going to spend buying the goods and services of Alaskans. And the other thing I would point out is that maybe it's a new world. Maybe we don't need this huge marketing bureaucracy. It's a new world out there. You know, when the state planner went away, the one that was in booklet form, I don't think we noticed. We just didn't notice. It didn't make any difference. You know, when I worked for the state and subsequently I retired and I wrote some recommendations to my agency as I was leaving. And one of the things that I said was, it isn't that people who are working in my section aren't working hard, but sometimes they're working hard at doing things that no longer need to be done or don't need to be done this way.
I think we have another question from Representative Newman, if you'd like to entertain that.
Ms. White, just briefly. Ms. White, I don't know remember what you did for a business, but you would have to be required to pay a tax under this. Do you pay enough taxes, or do you do enough business in this state to actually file for a corporate tax credit under this law? You could get your money back under a corporate tax credit or get investment back under this, I believe. So do you actually, would you actually file or take advantage of that?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you for your testimony, Ms. White. We have a few other callers who've already had the chance to testify, so I'm going to ask those who haven't, or they don't remember having testified yet. So we'll next go to Dan Oberlatz in Anchorage, Alaska Alpine Adventures. Are you there, Mr. Oberlatz?
I am. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Please state your name and any affiliation and begin your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Dan Oberlatz, and I own Alaska Alpine Adventures. We are an adventure travel company based here in Anchorage that we operate mostly statewide. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify. Clearly, as we understand now, the tourism marketing budget investment by the state of Alaska has been significantly reduced over the last couple of years. Now we're sitting at about $3 million. And at this level, Alaska can't compete with other destinations to attract visitors and continue to grow economic benefits for the state. You know, and at this rate, we will, in fact, lose market share to competitors around the world. I mean, for me, as a small business owner in Alaska, there's nothing more aggravating than, you know, opening a magazine and seeing an ad for Visit Idaho in any number of national publications. House Bill 383 and its partner bill in the Senate would create a funding plan for tourism based on a time-tested sort of national tourism improvement district model. And it will provide our industry with sustainable and stable source of funding with revenue that is generated almost entirely by tourism. And there's no dispute that tourism has been shown to provide big annual returns to the state's general fund to the order of $100 million, not to mention tens of million dollars annually to city and borough budgets. While I'm not entirely sure how I feel about paying an assessment, I do believe that this framework at least puts the future of our industry in our own hands. And passing a TID will also help free the legislature up from having to consider yet another annual industry ask. And finally, it will allow our state to begin to regain a competitive advantage as a top-notch global destination. And that's all I have to add. Thank you.
You're at exactly 2 minutes. So great job. Any questions from the committee? Thank you for your testimony this morning. Our next testifier is Mr. John White from the Denali Borough. Are you there, Mr. White?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Please state your name and any affiliation.
White? My name is John White, and I'm president of Nanana Raft Adventures Raft Denali. We're the raft company located at the entrance of Denali National Park. Thank you for taking my testimony. And the idea that Alaska is losing market share or we're not competitive with other world destinations, I simply don't agree with it. My wife is a Thailand. She's from a Thai citizen, and we've traveled all over Southeast Asia. And even among non-English-speaking people, they all seem to know where Alaska is. Alaska has huge name recognition and penetration of the market. And the idea that tourism marketing is an essential function of government That's just a bad idea. It's bad policy, and it comes at the expense of other more important functions of state government that are essential, things like prisons and police, fish and game, roads, and other forms of public infrastructure. Okay? But the bottom line is this whole proposal is unconstitutional. It's a dedicated fund. And all you got to do is look at your prohibition on capital projects and your limits on what can and can't be done with assessment monies. And those are all clear indications that this is a dedicated fund. People have yet to challenge the AFSCME statute in court, but I think if they did, it would go down. And I think there's some other dedicated funds that have similar language, like the Four Dam Pool, that are dedicated funds as well. And I would encourage everybody on this committee to take a look at the Alaska State Supreme Court decision called State versus Alex, because that's a roadmap of how this bill is going to get shot down in court. You can call it an assessment. It's a dedicated fund. You can call it a tax. That's a clear abrogation of Alaska's constitution that says taxing authority is reserved for the state or municipalities and or the legislature, and it can't be delegated to an executive agency. And I just think there are so this proposal is so poorly thought out. Alaskans are overwhelming in their desire to have state government get smaller, not bigger. You know, my mom was the first person to testify, and she works at my company. And the point that she almost made, but didn't quite get there, is the fact that I get more bang for my marketing buck out of TripAdvisor and Expedia than 20 years of membership in the APIA.
Mr. White, that's 2 minutes. If you don't mind, please wrap up your comments.
Wrap it up. Yeah. The Alaska Travel Industry, so the APIA, here's a Yellow Pages organization in the age of Amazon and Google. And the bottom line is that we don't need the state's money. We can do this on our own. We're going to be just fine without the state carrying our water. We'll get by. Let's focus on things like education, prisons and police, fish and game, mineral estate, things that are important for all Alaskans. I don't need your help, but thanks anyway.
Okay. Thank you for the testimony. Any questions or comments from the committee? Thanks again for calling in, Mr. White. We'll next go to Matthew Atkinson in Fairbanks. Are you there, Mr. Atkinson?
Atkinson.
Please state your name and any affiliation and begin your testimony.
Hi, thanks. My name is Matt Atkinson. I work with Northern Alaska Tour Company here in Fairbanks, as well as Orbelos Air Ventures and Wright Air Service, serving rural communities throughout interior and Alaska's Arctic. And thanks for the opportunity. Just wanted to speak a little bit about our operation. We are able to host. We're based in Fairbanks and operate Excursions North on a year-round basis. And we conduct Aurora excursions to the Arctic Ocean and to villages such as Kaktovik for polar bear viewing, Anaktivik Pass, Fort Yukon, Manly, Minto, Beaver, and we rely very much on the independent traveler, and I appreciated some of the comments from earlier testifiers, but I think that even in a modern age, that having a state contribute is very appropriate and very important to attract attract more visitors in an increasingly competitive global market. So for our Aurora viewing excursions, for example, we compete against Iceland, Norway, and Canada, and frankly, we have the best Aurora viewing in the world, but we have to get our message out. And whether that is, you know, through online ads, through TripAdvisor or other, internet media, it's appropriate to have a state contribution there. My understanding is that the TID allows us to avoid some of those complications of dedicated taxes, having to ask the legislature year in and year out for funding and to get us back to a competitive stance. We're for this and think that we can import visitors to places in rural Alaska, especially through our commuter operations that otherwise would have no chance, but we have to get the word out. Thanks.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Knopp.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you're a Part 135 operator then out of Fairbanks, is that correct?
That is correct. Among many things we do. Yeah.
So my question, so I'm from the Kenai Borough where we have a borough sales tax, and we are prohibited by actually federal law that prohibits us from taxing anything in regards to air taxis. I think something Senator Stevens did way back in the day. So all of our tour guides down there, tour operators hunting, fishing, Flight saying we are unable to have them impose a sales tax. So I guess I think that anybody in the state in the air taxi business probably would be exempt from this tax. Is that, have you had that conversation? Or is that your understanding? Or?
You know, I'm not 100% sure about that. And every 135 is going to be a little bit different in terms of their how involved they are with leisure travel. So I know on the peninsula there's some, you know, great 135 operators that are primary flight seeing a lot of good, great air viewing there. And I think it would be different 135 commuter versus 135 on demand. So we would play ball, at least part of our operation. The commuter would probably need to be exempt because it just doesn't yeah. tie in as much to the marketing and promotion as other aspects.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Not seeing any other questions from the committee, so thank you for calling in. And we'll next go to Mr. Rourke Brown in Homer. Are you there, Mr. Brown?
This is Rourke Brown with Homer Ocean Charters down in Homer. I'm speaking in favor of moving HB 383. I'm a simple person. I'll try and state things in simple terms that even I can understand here. That being said, marketing works. Tourism numbers are going to be higher when the state has a robust marketing program. Marketing increases the number of visitors. And targeted marketing can increase the quality of visitors in terms of spending. A few short years ago, the state marketing budget, including the industry contribution, was $18.6 million. The legislature decided that that sum was large enough that the state needed more input, and so the state took the program over. And with the budget concerns, the state stripped the money out of the program, and then gave it back to industry with instructions to figure out how to fund it yourselves, because we're not going to. With that in mind, a plan was developed based on a successful model in many other states to fund a marketing program utilizing tourism-generated funds. It is not state dollars. They come from tourism via the state. This is what you asked us to do. We've done that. The next step is to pass HB 383 out of this committee. I'm asking you to do that today because marketing works for my business, works for the state in general, and works for tourism in general. You know, we neglect to mention the additional revenues that Mr. Oberlatz mentioned in state and local taxes generated by the increase in tourism. You know, the dollars that are passed through are paying for themselves. So I would encourage you to pass this bill today.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Any questions or comments? Thank you for calling in. And the next testifier will go to Sarah Leonard with ATIA. She's Ms. Leonard, I know you've already testified to this, but we'll go ahead and give you another opportunity. Please state your name and affiliation.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Sarah Leonard, calling from Anchorage and representing the Alaska Travel Industry Association. You have heard from me before many occasions, and I just want to thank the committee members again for having this conversation with us. And I'll keep it short because you have heard me before you several times before that we appreciate the conversations, and I would ask you to pass this bill out of the committee today so we can continue with having dialogue with our industry and with the legislature to find a way to have a competitive marketing budget based on what some of the other testimony that you've already heard today. So I'll keep it short again. Thank you for your partnership, and please help us keep the conversation going and support tourism.
Thank you. Any questions at this time? And you'll stay on the line in case the committee members have questions later?
I will for sure.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on then to Mr. Eric Fullerton with Alyeska Resort in Girdwood. Are you there, Mr. Fullerton?
Yes, sir. This is Eric Fullerton with Alyeska Resort. I'm in Girdwood, Alaska. And, of course, I'm calling to express our strong opposition to HB 383 on a number of fronts. We've been working hard and trying to get as much information about this bill and how it works legally for several months now, and we have attempted to work with ATIA on a number of fronts to help create a bill that could work, but I think we're really, really far from being able to do that at this point. A lot of this stems from the current budget situation and the state funding, which should be focused on essential services like public safety and education, and we have to right-size our shit before we actually start to take more action and work with more money on things that are amenities like a marketing budget, as an example. We believe these new taxes will overly burden the targeted but undefined estimated 2,000 businesses, both large and small, who will pay the new taxes. And the vast majority of these businesses are unaware that these taxes are even being considered. And despite some statements made in last week's House hearing, the nebulous and yet undefined taxes will hit the gross revenues of these businesses and largely cannot be passed on to the customers due to the complexities of previously committed future contracts, of which we have several. These commissions are charged by third-party package providers, and they're integrated in product offerings for tourism experiences. So it makes it increasingly difficult for us to actually track or be able to manage a taxable situation that would occur. The tax assessment model is based on California's model, and we think that it's a poor fit for Alaska. Unlike Alaska, the TID funds in California cannot be diverted by government for other public purposes. These bills would outsource the state's power of taxation and appropriation as well. This is both poor policy, legally unsound, and it's unconstitutional. The tax cannot be dedicated to statewide tourism marketing, despite our efforts to try and make a situation where that could occur. These funds can be and very likely could be in the current budget crisis reallocated for another purpose, just like what has happened with the vehicle rental tax, and at minimum could be subject to more legal issues going forward. It's impossible to know which tourism business...
Mr. Fullerton, that's 2 minutes and 20 seconds. Please, if you can... wrap it up.
My last point is that this tax will hit Alaskan residents the hardest. A large percentage of the tax will come from Alaska residents who will utilize the services from the businesses year-round. This burdens our Alaskan residents with funding Alaskans' campaign to market the state as a summer tourist destination, and we feel like that is unfair to all of us.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions or comment from the committee? We have also.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Josephson?
Yeah, through the chair, your comment about this hurting Alaskan consumers the most. Am I reading page 6 right that a 2% gross tax? So if I were to spend $100 on a 2-hour kayak excursion, I would now pay $102, right? Isn't that what that says?
Are you asking me, sir? Yes. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I believe that would be the case, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Newman also has a question.
Thank you. Just briefly, sir, it's very competitive in the tourism industry. What are your profit margins?
All right, through the chair, Representative Tuck, thank you for your question.
Representative Newman asked that question.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Representative Newman. Our profit margins are already very slim, and this comes, you know, at a time when we have, you know, over the past few years struggled independently as a year-round destination resort in Alaska, the really the only one, to create sustainability in the off-peak months, which are not summer, that's roughly defined as October through May. And sometimes we have to use the summer months in order to help make up for the very thin margins that we get in the winter months. And we're hoping to continue and create a model that we can be sustainable. That said, our margins are still very slim, and a potential gross tax to our company here in Girdwood would essentially send more money up the funnel to ATIA, for example, which is more money than what I spend on marketing for our entire business year-round. So it just doesn't work for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But my point is these margins with these companies are very slim, and paying up to 2% on their gross could be detrimental to a lot of these companies. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Any other questions or comments? Thanks again, Mr. Fullerton. Our next testifier will be John Lambeth, again with ATIA, calling in from Sacramento, California. Are you there, Mr. Lambeth?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify again. I, too, will keep my comments short. I know the committee appreciates the importance of travel and tourism to the state of Alaska, what a tremendous job generator the tourism industry is and how important an economic engine it is to the state. But let me talk for just a brief moment about destination marketing. Several folks have said, why should we do destination marketing in the first place? And there's two compelling reasons that other destinations have found why they must work together to market their destination. One is that the primary motivator for a trip is that of the destination. It's not an individual business. When somebody first makes the decision of where to travel, it's where they're going. And second is scale. No individual business can market the state of Alaska. And so we must band together, and you must work together to be able to market the state. And this is something that other states have seen. I appreciate folks saying that they don't believe that a lack of marketing is going to make a difference. But the studies that have been conducted in other places that have lost tourism marketing dollars prove the opposite. And we've seen it time and time again. It's very tempting to define tourism marketing as, quote unquote, an amenity, when really what you find is that you will lose market share and that your competitors, and it is a very competitive business, your competitors are more than happy to take those tourism customers away from you. And believe me, they are raising a lot of money and working at a feverish pace to do so. The mechanism that's before you is a proven mechanism. It works throughout the U.S. It is not based just on the California model. California has that model. So do 14 other states. This is a tool that is a proven tool, but it really has been customized to fit the unique nature of Alaska. We know you have unique constraints and unique opportunities, and this bill really reflects that. As it relates to this not being an essential government function, I think the proposal before you is really a reflection that the industry has come together to say, we're going to put something
on the table. Mr. Lambeth, that's 2 minutes. Please wrap up if you can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In closing, I would say that if HB 383 is defeated, the folks that will be the happiest will be your competitors. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. Any questions or... We don't see any questions or comments from the committee. We have one more testifier on the line, and that's Mr. Brett Carlson from Coldfoot. Are you there, Mr. Carlson?
I am.
Please state your name and...
Thanks for the opportunity to... Brett Carlson, Coldfoot, Alaska, and a lifelong resident of Alaska and spent 30-plus years in the travel industry from, you know, Healy to Cocktobic. And just a couple of quick...
Any affiliation? You know, are you part of a business? Or are you part of the industry at all?
Oh, I'm sorry about that. We have an imperfect Skype connection from rural Alaska. But, yes, I work with Coldfoot Camp in Coldfoot, Alaska, and part of a family of companies that operates tours throughout Alaska's interior and Arctic.
Okay, thank you. Please begin your testimony.
The decision, you know, facing this committee on behalf of us Alaskans is we look to the decade ahead as how to monetize Alaska's travel resource for the maximum benefit of Alaska. The potential associated with Alaska's travel resource is immense. You know, the $4.17 billion in travel resource currently being exported from Alaska, in my opinion, represents just the tip of the iceberg. But as we know from our North Slope natural gas experience, potential remains just that unless the resource can be brought to market. The Alaska travel experience represents a compelling offering in the global travel marketplace, as others have stated. Yet the challenges associated with bringing the Alaska travel resource to market, or in this case, bringing the market to the resources, are very real. Alaska's travel markets are not next door. And as a long-haul destination, the expense and time commitment required by a consumer to take an Alaska vacation is significant. And market access barrier that can only be addressed through marketing. Alaska's true competitors in the global marketplace, other long-haul destinations, reinvest significant funds into funding tours and marketing programs in an effort to maintain and grow their market share. It is not accurate to state that Alaska's travel industry won't grow unless we robustly reinvest in Alaska's tours and marketing effort. There are multiple factors impacting the travel industry's growth rate: global economic conditions, exchange rates, broad travel trends, geopolitical events. And it is reasonable to assume that Alaska's travel industry, without a well-funded tourism marketing program, might stagger along at a 1% to 2% growth rate. But I would question whether or not accepting slow growth represents responsible stewardship of Alaska's travel resource and Alaska's economy as a whole. It is accurate to state that by making the decision to support a resource development initiative, which this bill is, focused on robust reinvestment of travel industry-generated dollars back into a tourism marketing program, it will result in bending upwards the growth curve of Alaska's travel industry and generating significant new wealth for Alaskans. In closing, very specifically, with an investment of $20 million, it is realistic to assume we could bend the growth rate of the industry from 1% to 2% to 3% to 4%. And that effectively creates a new billion-dollar industry in Alaska within a decade. You know, a 2% growth rate would get us from 4.1 to 4.75. The 4% gets us to $5.77 billion. And those who are concerned about the $10 million reinvestment of the vehicle rental tax, back into the industry, the real answer is by investing this money into marketing, the budget is going to be benefited, not hurt. You know, with a 4% growth rate a decade from now, there'll be $22 million, additional dollars going to state government than will occur if it doesn't happen. So I thank you for considering the bill. You've spent a lot of time thinking about it. I encourage you to pass it, particularly if your vision for Alaska's travel industry is one where small Alaskan-owned businesses like myself, you'd like us to have a seat at the table. So thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Any questions from the committee? Thanks again for calling in. I don't see any other any others on the line who called in specifically to testify. Some are available for questions. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Is there anyone online that would like to testify? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony on 383. And just so that the committee knows, we have Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal on the line. Ken Alper is with us in the room. John Lambeth with Civitas Advisors. Sarah Leonard with ATIA. Colleen Stevens with the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board are all on the line. And I believe Mr. Fullerton with Alyeska Resort and Brittany Hayward with the Division of Economic Development is also available for questions. Representative Gren and your staff, would you please come to the table? Continue discussion on 383. Are there any other comments or questions from the committee for the bill sponsor?
Under when we get to discussion, we get to committee discussion. I've got some comments.
I have a question for Emily Nauman.
Okay, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Emily Nauman, if she's still online. There's constitutional concerns on this bill, and one of the constitutional concerns is the opportunity for assessments to be determined down the future. But doesn't section on page 6, on lines 16 through 26, doesn't that alleviate that? I mean, it looks like to me like it's already predetermined, much like that we have with the ASME statutes. Because it looks like there's a definition there also. So doesn't this alleviate some of the concerns that that may challenge on whether or not this is constitutional?
I'm going to go ahead and answer the question. For the record, this is Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal Services. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, great. Through the chair to Representative Tuck, I understand your comment that the set out assessment rates on page 6, lines 18 through 26 do mirror the type of taxing or assessment structure that appears in ASME. I guess I would offer that the reason this bill concerns me a bit more in the than the structure of ASME is because there are other portions of the tax that are not determined in this bill or that will be determined in statute that will affect both who gets taxed and if they get taxed at all. As has been noted in the previous discussions, the bill doesn't contain a definition of what the tourism industry is. Will it include hotels? Will it not include hotels? Will it include cruise ships? Will it not include cruise ships? You know, there's a huge void there in determining who will be taxed, and that's normally the purview of the legislature or the executive branch to regulation. But mainly, at least foundationally, in the legislature. Now, the legislature is releasing that power to a board and then to the department through regulation. But that is unlike the structure in ASME where it's very clear who will be taxed and on what product.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman and Representative Tuck.
Could I follow up on that?
Please, Representative Josephson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Nauman, following up on Representative Tuck's comment, while I hear your point, I see your legal memorandum, which is now, we all have it, so there it is. But you write that, quote, the legal theory underlying the approach was that the legislature has imposed the tax in contingent upon the happening of the specified event, close quote. In this case, the happening of the specified event would be the election for an assessment, right?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. So, and to follow up? And as Representative Tuck said, the authority is expressed in lines 18 to 26 very concretely. It says there can be a 0 to 2% assessment on gross revenue. So there's no mystery about that part. But your concern, and I know you may have more than that, but your concern is the who. Is that right?
For the record, this is Emily Nauman for Legislative Legal Services still. To Representative Josephson through the chair, I think my concern is twofold. Both, I have a fundamental underlying concern that this bill, even in setting out tax rates, goes too far into a constitutional gray area. And then the second fold concern I have is that it goes farther than ASME in that the amount of authority that's transferred away from the legislature is even broader than that structure. So I think I've referred to it sort of as constitutional creep. You know, we worry about these little things that turn into bigger and bigger and bigger things, and eventually they tip the court into into the unconstitutional direction. And I just have concerns that there are many things in this bill that would trigger a court to fall into the unconstitutional, you know, basket, as opposed to leaning towards the constitutionality of this bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nauman. So, did you express these concerns when you drafted the new committee substitute?
Through the chair to Representative Tuck, I'm unable to talk about the discussions I have with individual members.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Follow up on that.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nauman, we heard some testifiers say that this creates an illegal dedicated fund. That is not your belief, is it? So when we're talking about constitutional infirmities potential, it's not because this creates a dedicated fund. Am I right about that?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, yes, the bill does not create a constitutional dedication of funds as far as I can tell. The flow of money in this bill is that the department places the money into a sort of an account, if you can. It's a bookkeeping type of mechanism, and that the legislature then gets a record of how much money has been deposited into that account and has the authority to appropriate it for whatever purpose it wishes. The bill suggests that it appropriates it for tourism marketing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Any other questions or comment? So what's the wish of the committee with regards to 383? Or Representative Gren, do you have any closing thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think the testifiers here today did a great job of kind of showing the impact and the need of what we're trying to do here in terms of a marketing fund for the state of Alaska, and have focused really on the economic benefits and the ROI of what tourism marketing does for our state, from small businesses to communities off the road system. I mean, I really do believe, and that's why we brought forth this legislation, that something is needed. We've told the industry that they need to do something. This is their response and my response to that intent language as we move forward into the next decade in terms of what we do with the second largest private sector in our state. And the proposal, the bill before you asks that the state be a partner with industry as they assess themselves and determine that they want to be part of the solution. You know, as lawmakers, if we see a problem, we're tasked to solve it. The problem we have is during a fiscal crisis, we have determined we cannot fund a tourism effort as years passed. So how do we move forward? And I think that I think we all would agree with that view. Obviously, the bill gets in the way of trying to maneuver and sidestep its path through some constitutional concerns. We've brought that up at the first committee. I think it's been brought up several times throughout committee. The legal memo before you obviously shows the concerns that Ledge Legal has. But you know, obviously our hope is that we can continue this conversation and find a way to have all lawmakers here in the building become aware of the situation and the path. You know, how tricky it is, but. We're all smart people. I think there's a way through this with more work on this bill. You know, the Department of Revenue has a task at hand within this bill, and I think that falls in the purview of the Finance Committee, Department of Revenue tasks. So our hope is to move it out, but you know, we understand if that's not the will of the committee. You know, we'll continue to work on this and find a solution, because I think tourism marketing does need a solution. There is a problem, and I'm determined to find a solution working with industry and working with everyone in the building on that solution. So thank you.
Thank you. And do you have a Representative Newman?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, as the person who was in charge of the operating budget at the time when we put the amendment in there, intent language that tourism industry to become more self-funded, it was because of the fact that we have a lot of strains in this budget right now. And as the Representative Gren said, you know, some people would consider this a crisis, but we're trying to fund education, public safety, things that are mandated by our Constitution, and we don't have the money to do it. We're borrowing money, billions of dollars now, taking it out of the permanent fund dividend. Yet, you know, the industry came back, and the solution here is to backfill these funds with general fund dollars. Quite frankly, you know, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed, Mr. Chair. It's not your fault. You kind of took on something here and is trying to manage this. But, you know, the tourism industry is extremely important for the state of Alaska. And I think that the legislature let them down. I think that we let them down in the fact that we didn't have a plan to come forward on this, to assist them in this. And we needed it. We should, because these are important industries. It's been stated the second largest industry in this state. And we come up with several plans. The first one didn't make any sense, and as far as I was concerned, I had objections to it. We came back with another plan that basically did the same thing. Mr. Chair, we need to do better than that, and we can do better than that. you know, I'll, like I said before, I'll do all I can to help with this and do what I can because of what it is, particularly in areas of my state. A lot of them are going out of business right now because they need some help, but the state cannot just afford to put money and give private industry cash like this, basically what we're doing. Some companies will be able to apply for this and not. It's very unfair. Who would be able to apply for this? We heard from Ms. White, who said that she would not be able to apply for this because she just doesn't make enough to try and get corporate tax credits from the state. What does it do to her to get corporate tax credits against investments that she makes? Mr. Chair, I think we should continue to work on this. I don't even know if, I don't care if we have official meetings on it, but it needs to happen. I think it should happen in the public as much as we can. As it stated, there's some folks have been around here for a while, and we need to come up with something better. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman. I believe Representative Gren has a
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding the tax credits, I'd like to see if we can get some more information, if we can share some more information regarding that, because I think, Representative Newman, I'm not sure if from what the testifier said and what you believe the tax credits to do, if we could share a little bit more about
please.
That. I'll defer to my staff on that first note.
Okay. Representative, or to the chair, Burke Ivey, staff to Representative Gren, just to clarify, the tax credit included in the legislation is in regards to the vehicle rental tax only. So it's our understanding the intention of the industry is not to include the vehicle rental tax entities, entities subject to the vehicle rental tax currently under law to a potential assessment as they're already paying a tax and passing that through to their visitor customers when they rent a vehicle. And so the idea is that as a partner, as an engine of the sector of the tourism industry who's producing revenue, and given that in statute states it's for tourism development and marketing, this simply allows them to also participate in contributing towards, just as the rest of the industry would, towards tourism marketing in the state of Alaska. So it's unrelated to the corporate income tax. Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I don't need to go into it. I know what the vehicle rental tax is and what it does. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck and then Josephson.
Yeah, as we move this bill forward, I hope there's a few things that can be addressed, some tighter sidebars on some of the assessments, and hopefully be able to define. I know that define the assessments, who in those sectors and what those sectors are or sections. I know that when we did the energy policy for the state of Alaska, we had stakeholder meeting after stakeholder meeting after stakeholder meeting so we can get that all dialed in so that when we had something ready, it was good to go. I do think that there's going to be a lot of businesses out here that don't see this coming, and so I have a little bit of concerns about what may happen with this. And also, the other concern that I have is the weighted votes. And it appears to me that the more money somebody makes in the industry, the more power they will have over the little guys. And so I don't know if this bill sponsor is open to an idea as this thing moves along to a one vote, one person kind of a, because, you know, we don't, the way our elections are right now, we don't allow the rich to have more votes than the poor. And I just kind of feel like that this is kind of going in that direction with allowing the more powerful of those in the industry imposing things on the less powerful of those in the industry. So I hope they open, keep an open mind to that.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. Do you have a, would you like to speak to that?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Tuck, the weighted votes is used in every TID model throughout. We've mentioned that the 14 states that use that. The reason behind that, I think the philosophy, and actually Mr. Lambeth could maybe speak to the impacts if you'd care for more information. The real focus of that is, you know, if you have more vote because you'll end up contributing more through the assessment. So that, you know, a large hotel, you know, might end up paying $100,000 through the assessment, whereas a small B&B would, you know, might owe $1,000. And so that obviously that if they're going to vote yes or no on an assessment, they know that they'll be impacted more through financial reasons. So if they have a large voice, you're right, larger than a small business, but it's because of the assessment would impact them more in terms of the bottom line. So Mr. Landeth might be able to speak greater to some of the philosophy behind that, but I think that's one of the main reasons.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a handful of comments. On this topic that Representative Tuck raised reminds me of the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House. The U.S. Senate is one state, two votes. Essentially, the U.S. House is by population. This is more like the U.S. House. It's a policy call, I don't have any particular concerns, although I mean, if the big players overwhelmed the small players and were dictating to them, that would be a concern for sure. But there are, in the bill, there's a requirement for public meetings prior to any assessment. I think that's important. Just to clean up a couple of things, there was question in the committee about whether credits could be sold or transferred. They can't be. That's resolved by Section 1. We see that the Department of Revenue gets to keep key powers like the power to adopt or amend board definitions of segment in tourism business and tourism industry. The assessment can be at the discretion of the travel industry or tourism trade individual, fully paid for by the customers. So it's designed to, at least theoretically, hold the business harmless. I wouldn't be deterred, and I'm not rich by any means, I wouldn't be deterred from paying $102 rather than $100 for an excursion. That isn't going to stop me. We know that the tourism, the travel industry is willing to roll the dice. I think it's a risk worth taking. They know that this fund can't be dedicated. It may be appropriated. It may not be appropriated. That's what's happened with the vehicle rental tax, where the legislature in AS 4352080 said that it may appropriate the balance. There's a separate account, but the remaining balance of the fund may be appropriated for tourism development and marketing. I share Representative Newman's concern. I have zero doubt that those agencies will need their $9 million. So they're going to have to, if this moved along in a significant way, the two bodies would have to come together to cover those needs. But those needs have honestly but pretty thoroughly usurped this fund and turned it into something that is sort of quasi-tourism but not truly tourism. So some of that is already going on. In that respect, this bill creates a little bit more truth in budgeting, I think. I would submit. A couple other things. There was discussion about whether members, that is, tourism trades, could appeal. They can appeal under 4305. That's the general right to appeal. Any feature of this, as I understand. We know that the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board is sunsetting. The administration wants it to sunset. So the only connection the executive branch, I think, will have to tourism would be through this, unless we reinvigorate the Tourism Marketing Board. We know that this broadly, maybe imperfectly, but broadly complies with legislative intent. It makes sense that Representative Gren would bring the bill since he's the House member on the travel board. That's sort of his job, in a sense. And I just wanted to mention something else about we heard one caller who sort of seemed to discount the idea that this was needed at all. I have to believe that the other 48 states or whatever know what they're doing, that when you market, well, we all know this. It's also a truism that, for example, I'm going to be on June 29th going to the Speaker's District. I'm going to be hopping in a float plane, strapping a couple of kayaks to it, going on a kayaking fishing excursion for a week. If I wasn't in Alaska, there's no way to get to Dillingham. You've got to get here first. And there's no direct flights I know of. And so this is about getting people here first. You know, there are certainly some things that I think need ironing out, but I think it's sufficient to pass muster. We've certainly done, although we haven't amended it in the committee except through the CS, we've done a fair amount of due diligence. We're not ignorant of the bill. We understand the bill pretty well, and those are my thoughts. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Knopp.
So, question I'll have for the sponsor. I'm a little curious, through the chair, Representative Grant. So, on this assessment, I'm kind of wondering how we're going to, not that I fully understand it, but I'm wondering how we're going to make that work. Is it somewhat like an income tax? We call it an assessment, not a tax. But is it the honor system? Do they have to file a tax return? And so are we bordering on an income tax that we don't have at the state level? I mean, how's that system work? And then, you know, the gross revenue component, I think, bothers me a little bit. I think somebody mentioned that earlier, you know, net revenue is substantially different at the end of the year than gross revenue. And so when I think Representative Newman talked about profit margins, and I think when you're, I'm going to call it taxing or assessing, however you want to phrase it. So I'm a little concerned about the gross revenue component, but I'm more concerned about how the collection of this revenue, we don't have, we don't tax LLCs, we don't tax S-Corps, we have a C-Corp tax in this state, but so for sole proprietors and LLCs and S-Corps, there is no tax base. How do you envision this working?
Sure.
Go ahead and ask Mr. Alper to come up.
Yeah, luckily we have Division of Tax Director Ken Alper in the room, who I think would give you the details that you need. Representative Kopp, thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ken Alper. I'm the Director of the Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. Through the chair to Representative Knott, the Department of Revenue is charged in this bill with collecting and administering the assessment. You can call it a tax. It is, I mean, from our perspective, a tax. I wouldn't consider it an income tax. It's in many ways a miniature sales tax because you're looking at the gross transaction level. And it would require a certain outreach to the members of the industry, get them enrolled, get them licensed. That's why we have a fiscal note. We have a relatively robust fiscal note. We envision having to build a module onto our overarching tax management software to be able to take care of this, and we've added three positions that would be running this new tax. That would not... That would give us the ability to take care of the people, communicate with them, make sure that everything's done right, help with regulations and that sort of thing. Also, probably some economic analysis and reporting. At the scale of this, it's more like some of the smaller receipts-type taxes. We tax wholesale cigarette merchants, for example, or our alcoholic beverage distributors. And there's a form that's generally done online. They make monthly or quarterly payments. And things just sort of go along. And if the system flags anything is not looking right, we'll put some resources into auditing them and make sure they pay right.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Alper can correct me if you're wrong, I believe that we do allow funds through this assessment to cover the cost of the fiscal note. And I think, again, Mr. Alper might agree with me that if we had something already established, like a state sales tax or something, that not that I'm advocating for that in this chair, but that system, if something was already in place, this would be a lot more easier to roll out.
Mr. Chair, I'll agree with the sponsor, Representative Grant, on this. First off, the changes made in the committee substitute did react to our fiscal note, which came in based on the original version and clarified that we could use some of those funds. The revenue side of this bill is indeterminate because the rate's not set, the segments that will be taxed aren't set. But we're talking, the industry is looking for something, as I understand it, in the $10-15 million range. Our fiscal note, once we get the system set up, is, I think, $300,000 or $400,000 a year, to put that into scale. We would, and then the legislature could appropriate from the fund that amount that we need for our budgetary needs, and then the rest of it would go to the tourism marketing entity. If the state already had a sales tax, what that would mean is we would already have a tax relationship with most of these businesses who would be collecting it at their point of sale. The hardest part for us, quite frankly, is not the ongoing administration, but the initial outreach, the finding all of these businesses, making initial contact, asking them to estimate their what their revenue might be next year for the purpose of weighting the vote so that when the vote does occur, we can help the Division of Elections count and determine whether it was a successful election. I think that's probably the heaviest lift for us is right at the front end.
Could you just describe the benefit of using the gross revenue rather than net? Like why was that picked over net?
So Mr. Chairman, Representative Gren might have insight into why gross was selected. I think this is typical with the TID. But once you go to a net-based tax, now you have a much deeper set of information that you need. You need people's tax returns. You need people's expenses. You need someone determining what's an allowable expense and not an allowable expense. We have a massive track record in our corporate income taxes and our oil and gas production taxes in that subject area, and I wouldn't want to have to replicate that for an industry-specific tax like this. It's just not big enough to warrant the effort. I think, and I might be straying a little off path here, the intent of having multiple assessment rates within the bill, that there's the option of different rates, is that there allows the possibility of one industry segment might come in at a different proposed rate than another industry segment, and that would be done to reflect the inherent profitability differences. Someone who's a tour vendor might have a thinner profit margin, say, than someone that has a hotel. And if that were determined, the industry group, the board, might choose to try to assess the hotels at 2% and the tours at 1%, for example. That would be a way to compensate for those issues that vary from industry to industry.
I think some of the concern is that that varies not just between industries, but even within the same industry, the different geographic regions in the state. You know, just the cost of doing business in some places in Alaska are much greater than others, and that, you know, so the margins that you're working with can vary as well. So,
Mr. Chairman, that's true. If I remember, there was an example made: a hotel or a retail purchase in your district is going to cost more than Anchorage. On the other hand, if the hotel costs twice as much and it's a 2% tax, the 2% tax is going to be twice as much, but it's going to be seen just as a 2% tax. My wife runs a hotel. I have a small conflict here. And I talked to her about this proposal when it came out, and she was aware of it from her prior involvement with the Alaska Travel Industry Association. She was initially concerned until I explained the part about being able to pass it through, that it's explicit in the legislation that the merchant can add a line item at the bottom of the transaction that says plus the 2%, 1%, whatever state marketing fee. Once it doesn't directly carve into your own gross revenue, but it adds on top of it, the customer absorbs that. The customers in Juneau, where we are now, don't blink paying a 12% sales tax. This additional increment on top of that will just be perceived as a normal add-on cost that governments add for various purposes.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, for Mr. Alper, I want to follow up a little bit on what the chair said about disproportional in the same segment. So, when we talk gross revenue, and so what sticks in my mind, Mr. Alper, is so if I gross $1 million a year, yeah, but I'm only netting $100,000, so that 2% on a million is only $20,000, but that 2% on net is 20,000 or 20% of your income. So I think that's the disproportional that the chair was just talking about, even inside the own industry. And so I guess I go back to that gross revenue versus net revenue and all things not being created equal. I think it creates a serious hardship in a lot of cases. If you're up around an alley, you're pretty consistent year after year. But if you're in Coldfoot, it's a whole different story. So just your thoughts on that, please.
So through the chair, Representative Knopp, what's important here is that all your competitors are in the same boat, that everyone who is in your line of business would be mandated to pay the same percentage. And the degree to which that 2%, in the example of a business with a gross of $1 million, how easy is it to pass that on to the customer? If every transaction had that 2% fee at the bottom, then your $1 million revenue would turn into $1,020,000, and then your tax would simply be giving that $20,000 back to the state, and you'd be right where you started. If you were unable to absorb that fee into your business structure for some reason, and I heard some public testimony, I think the issue might come up for some of the folks who are selling packages in bulk to the cruise lines who are at a fixed rate. They would probably have a more difficult time passing it on, but my sense is the next time that contract was renegotiated, it would have to get built into the fee because obviously something's got to give. You can't expect people to perform a service and not make any money.
Any other comments or questions? Representative Newman, then Tallarico.
Mr. Alper, in Section 1, where a taxpayer is allowed a credit against their taxes due under corporate taxes, Section 43. So if I'm levied a taxes on page 6, up to 2% of my gross, I can apply for a corporate tax credit against the corporate taxes I owe to the state. It is net double dipping.
So through the chair, Representative Newman, it's important to separate. This bill is doing two very different and distinct things. All of the sections in Title 44 are about the new assessment and the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board and how they would set these rates of somewhere between 0.25% and 2%. Separate and distinct from that and already existing in statute is the vehicle rental tax, which is in AS 4352. That's a higher rate tax, I believe, of up to 10% of the cost of a vehicle rental, both personal and commercial cars and trucks up to 8,500 pounds pay this tax to the state of Alaska. That has, as we've discussed, this light designation towards tourism marketing that has not been fully recognized by the legislature in recent years, but it goes to areas that directly or indirectly support tourism, like park maintenance. So what this Section 1 is limited to is to say the car rental companies, specifically the taxpayers of that tax, if they choose to voluntarily donate money to this tourism marketing entity, which would supplement the assessments on the hotels and the tour vendors and all of that, they could take that voluntary donation and credit it against their vehicle rental tax obligation. That's all the credit in Section 1 does.
Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Alpert, so if I understand this right, in order to see the board, the way it's written right now, we kind of need a pre-assessment so that we understand, because of the weighted voting provision, you almost need to do a pre-assessment in order to get people there the way it's currently written in the right numbers. Is that refer to it as that? Or
Representative Tallarico, that's a great phrase. We haven't used it, but we've said in our internal conversation, I've talked about it with other members, and I said it a few minutes ago, the hardest part for us happens at the very beginning. That's in large part what I'm talking about. We don't currently have a tax-paying relationship with tourism businesses. The vast bulk of them are not corporate income taxpayers or do not pay a tax to the state of Alaska. They might pay local sales taxes or other taxes to other entities. So reaching out to them and getting them licensed is one thing. Telling them to estimate what their revenue is going to be next year so we could properly weight the vote is hard. Now, the bill gives us regulatory authority on how to deal with issues that come up in the course of doing that. Example of someone refuses to answer. Well, we would probably have to establish their weighting as if they were the lowest weighted person within their industry segment, for example. Or what do you do with a new arrival? If we do a solicitation for information one fall and the next spring we finally get around to the election, what happens if someone opened up that December? We would have to find a way to properly weight that person. There's also the possibility of purposefully overstating your own estimated revenue so as to maximize the value of your vote. These are issues that we are qualified to engage with that we would have to work through in the regulations drafting process.
Okay, thank you. And that, because I have some of the same concerns about weighted voting, I have a concern having a piece of legislation that has the term weighted voting inserted in it, actually. Thinking about public perception and weighted voting. At the same time, I guess one of the concerns I would have is
I'm from an area, and I'm a big supporter of tourism. I'm from an area that, you know, brings in, I don't know, 15,000 to 25,000 people a day, usually all summer long. And our population would expand by 10 times its size in the municipality I was in for 3.5 months a year. There was also, there was a lot of exchange of assets in particular times. In other words, someone that owned a reasonably large business might actually unload some of their assets to someone else. Construction season is short, and they build these assets incredibly fast, and their growth rate can just changes remarkably. It's incredible what they do, and I just wonder if we see some type of problem that we've set something up and suddenly it just won't ever balance itself out because of that particular scenario. A hotel is a great example. You know, we've seen people in our area suddenly add double in size or add a third of their size in over the winter season. You know, so they have a place at the table, and then they come back to the board and say, "We deserve a bigger place at the table. That needs to happen now. Our assets are entirely different than what they were just 6 months ago or a year ago." And do you think there'll be an issue there as those things shift and shuffle around?
I just want to point out and allow you to respond. We have 3 minutes left in the scheduled time frame for the meeting. We need to vacate the room in time for a 1:15 meeting, and it is my intention to entertain a motion to move this to finance to further the discussion on it. So if you don't mind responding, Mr. Alper.
I will quickly respond, Mr. Chairman, as quickly as I can, and Representative Tallarico speaks to one of our anxieties. This is a bill that is likely to be challenged legally. We want to make sure before it passes the legislature that it is as clean and, frankly, bulletproof as possible. One of the issues about the weighted votes is what happens if, after the first actual assessment comes in, if you were to kind of relook at the votes, what if it shouldn't have passed because the numbers were different? These are the kind of things we really want to talk about as the bill works its way through the process. You're right in raising them. We are aware of them. I think the chair and the sponsor are saying that we've probably done as much as we could do in this specific special committee, but these are things we absolutely need to work on.
At this time, I'd entertain a motion to move the bill forward.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we report committee substitute for House Bill number 383, its version 30-LS1214-R, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Is there an objection?
Object, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman, would you like to speak to your objection?
Mr. Chair, you know, as it's been noted, there's a lot of questions here, and I'm not afraid to do my job. We've got a lot going on in Finance Committee right now. We're still trying to get the budgets done. You know, I'm disappointed that ATA didn't get more help on this, I think, throughout the year. I'm well willing to do that. If we move this come out of here, it's just going to die for sure without any additional help. So I would certainly not support moving this out of committee. I'd support us finishing up our job. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Any other comments or questions?
Mr. Chairman, so, you know, I'm not going to support moving the bill either, but I do appreciate the sponsor talking about taking it back and reworking it if it doesn't move out of committee, and I think it's appropriate. And I think it needs so much work that it should go back and be reworked. And so it's you know, the committee's choice whether to move it forward and let the next committee do what they will with it, or just send it back to the sponsor and let them work it. You know, I'm a big supporter of marketing. You know, we've dealt with it at the local level. Representative Tallarico and I both served local government for quite some time, and we dealt with the marketing issues. And I personally like local marketing, and I know that everybody in the business markets their own product through the trade shows and whatever mechanisms they find. So I'm not sure the effectiveness that we've always had at the state level, and I'm concerned that the administration over the years, as Representative Joseph mentioned, we used to fund it pretty close to $20 million at one point, and now we see not much value in that marketing. So I'm a little concerned that the administration hasn't taken a little bit more active role in this proposal. And so my preference is to send it back to the sponsor and let them continue to work it maybe for next session. But that's just me. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
Question?
I just, if I might, just want to say, I, you know, I, agree with a lot of things that have been stated here. I do want to thank Representative Gren and especially his staff, Ms. Ivey, for the amount of work that you've put into the bill since it came to this committee. You've been extremely responsive to people who've actually taken the time to go to your office and work with you on their issues. I personally also have serious concerns with the bill, but I believe that tourism marketing is important enough for the conversation to continue. It's so late in the legislature with 12 days left in our regular session. I don't believe we have the time right now in this committee to keep it and put the work in. And my preference would be to move it to finance where that conversation can continue. And if it's something that we have to continue to work on in the next legislature, then I hope that we're all still here and can continue that work. But yeah, I just want to thank Representative Grant and his staff for all the work that they've put into it already. Is your objection maintained?
Yes.
Okay. We call the roll, please.
Representative Tallarico.
No.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Representative Newman.
No.
Representative
Knopf? No. Chair Pinkin? Yes.
Four yeas, three nays.
Okay. Thank you, and we'll adjourn the meeting at 1:02 p.m., and please state to sign the recommendation form.